Welcome to the Manx Theatre Podcast.
Come on to the theatre!
Hello, and welcome back to episode 53 of the Manx Theatre Podcast with me, Neil Callan. Thank you to everyone who's listened to our previous episodes. If you're brand new to the podcast, welcome along and thanks for joining us. In this podcast, I'd like to try and keep you up to date with what's going on in the theatre in the Isle of Man, chatting to the cast and the creatives of upcoming shows to find out a little bit more about the shows and the people behind them, and also what our Manx-born and bred performers are doing further afield.
Coming up on this week's podcast,
I'm joined by Victoria McLaughlin, Mark Doherty and Jonathan Slight from the Manx Operatic Society ahead of their upcoming production of Oliver, which opens this Saturday night. You can still listen to all of our previous episodes through all the usual podcast outlets or at manxradio.com/podcasts. Whilst you're there, make sure to give us a like and click subscribe or follow or whatever it is you need to do to make sure that you never miss an episode. Now, in the last episode, I mentioned that Centre Stage Productions had held their audition the previous weekend, and at the time of recording, the cast list had not yet been published. Well, no sooner had I pressed publish than the cast list was out. And here we are. So here is Centre Stage's cast for School of Rock this October. In the lead role of Dewey Finn, we have Joey Wilde. The head teacher, Rosalie Mullins, will be played by Christine Sutcliffe. Ned Schneebly, Dewey's best mate, will be played by Alex Duncan. Then his girlfriend, Patty DeMarco, will be played by Lauren Newson. In the kids, there's an interesting setup. Some kids are playing parts in all of the performances, and the rest of the roles are split between two groups. So the roles of Zach, Katie and Freddie will be played by Mason Matthews, Eloise Barnes and Will Gerard, and they appear to be playing those every night. Then in Team Rock, we have Mila Barnett playing Lauren, Emily Musgrove playing Tamika, and Ailish Kilgallen playing Summer. Then in Team Role, Lauren is played by Chloe Corkle, Tamika by Rosie Bullock, and Summer is played by Crystal Stitt. And it would appear from the cast list that Billy, played by Sean Cannon, will be playing every night, but I may be wrong. Then there are two child ensemble teams, so they will alternate with Team Rock and Team Roll, and there is quite a few well-known names there, actually, or names to look out for the future, anyway. There are a few surnames in there, certainly, that I recognise from older brothers and sisters and maybe mums and dads as well. Also in the adult ensemble, we have Adrian Cowan, Andrew Dayton, Chris Kane, David Lyons, Emma Stratford, Jeff Pugh, Helen Ferner, Meg Walker, Paula Gelling, Sam Farragher, Sean Reaney, Sherry Pulteney, Trish Wiley, and Victoria Kizik. So there's some regular performers there with Centre Stage filling up the rest of the cast. Well, that looks like a great cast, and it's going to be a great show. I know it's a fantastic show with some fantastic music, so we're really looking forward to seeing that later in the year in October. All the very best, Centre Stage. Can't wait to see it. Now, since the last episode only came out about 5 days ago, there isn't a great deal for me to update you on because it's all still pretty fresh. But, however, I was quite fortunate in this last few days to meet up with Ben Caron, who's home on the island for a week, to see his mum's new salon open up. And we got together the other night up at Manx Radio and had a really, really good chat. And I'll be bringing that to you in the next episode in just a couple of weeks' time. So until then, make sure you keep up to date with what's going on between episodes by following Manx Theatre Podcast on both Facebook and Instagram and at Manx Theatre Pod on Twitter. Right, down to business. I'm joined in the studio today by performers Jonathan Slight, Mark Doherty and Victoria McLaughlin, ahead of the Manx Operatic Society's upcoming production of Lionel Bart's Oliver. Jonathan, Mark, Vicky, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Jonathan, I should actually say welcome back because this is your second appearance, isn't it?
It is, yes.
You were on about, what, 3 years ago when you did Shrek?
2021, was it Shrek?
Yeah.
I think, yeah, live from Sarah Holland's.
Oh, yes, 2 years, kitchen. Yes. No, it is 3 years ago because it's 2024 now.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
End of February, and I'm still forgetting that it's a different year. But you were live from Sarah Holland's garden, weren't you?
I was.
We're still sort of under...
Strange old times.
Strange times. Having to work outside because of restrictions, but thankfully...
Yeah.
Let's touch some wood.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem to be too much of an issue anymore.
We won't talk about that.
No. Yeah, we don't want another Sweeney Todd. No. But we had to move the whole show back away. That was fun. Yeah. Right, so you're here today because we're here to talk about the Manx Operatic Society's upcoming production of Oliver. For someone who's come down on the last UFO or has been living under a rock for their entire life, give us a rough overview of the story.
So, Oliver is obviously taken from
Charles Dickens classic, and obviously with a Dickensian classic such as that, you have a various themes that run through the story that are prevalent in most of Dickens' tales, and it's of a lost childhood, of a lost mother, a discussion of the poverty gaps that existed at the time, and sort of painted throughout that narrative is stories of abuse, of manipulation, of love shining through ultimately.
I was going to say all the fun stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's an incredible tale. It resonates in so many ways, I think, with so many people because of that.
Yeah.
The themes are sort of hard-hitting themes, but also incredibly happy themes as also. And, I won't obviously tell you what happens at the end. I think most people know what happened at the end, but it's
spoilers.
But we are dealing with a person who's come from the UFO, so they may may not know the end. But ultimately, it's a tale of redemption and love winning through. But it has to go through some very sad and dark places for that to eventually happen. Some huge. I think that's why people tend to want to be in Oliver, because there's so many themes at play, there's so many places you can take your acting, so many places you can take your singing.
Yeah.
Throughout, yeah, a story that encompasses everything.
And it's the story of Oliver Twist, who's an orphan.
Yeah. So Oliver is an orphan. He's in a workshop, workhouse, should I say, and he has no parents. He's an orphan.
Mm-hmm.
And we follow Oliver's journey from a workhouse surroundings. He escapes the workhouse. He doesn't escape. Bumble sells him to an undertaker. He runs away from the undertaker to London.
Yep.
To find love. And we have that seminal piece by Oliver, obviously, and searching for that. Where is love? And then he ends up in the hands of a character called Dodger, who mm-hmm. is a child thief on the streets, a whereabouts. He warms to Oliver. We also think that he may be recruiting Oliver for his gang. And he then subsequently introduces him to the leader of the gang, which is a man called Fagin, who has a number of children who run and pickpockets and steal on the streets of London for him, and have been doing so for many years. And that sort of takes us up to Nancy, and I think you're probably mm-hmm. best starting Nancy's journey from there.
So one of Fagin's original gang, Nancy, is now older and is a sort of motherly figure to the boys in the gang, I suppose.
Yep.
And develops a strong relationship with Oliver as well, who she sees that kind of innocence in. Nancy's been working for Fagin since she's a child, but she's also hopelessly in love and devoted to Bill Sykes, who is another member of a former member of Bill's gang, but is much more the sort of baddie of the story. But Nancy ultimately will never give up on that love that she's got for Bill. But she finds herself with that tension between protecting Oliver and that innocence she sees, and, you know, standing by Bill.
Yeah, and then you've got Bill the wrong'un.
Mm. Yep,
played by Jonathan.
Yeah, Sykes is kind of hard to pigeonhole, because I read about him early on, and I think he's described as a pure psychopath.
Yeah.
And I spoke to Chris Mabry about this. I said, just about characterization, he said, I think he's at best a sociopath, and at best a psychopath. So I thought, oh, that's interesting. So yeah, I think he's supposed to be like the original, like he was the Dodger of his day, and now he's older.
Yeah.
And how do you describe, he's basically just a thug.
Yeah.
Who works for Fagin, and he threatens Fagin a lot, but doesn't do anything about it. I think he still sees Fagin as a paternal type of figure. Mm. Yeah. Do you think?
So, yeah, well, we've been exploring this quite a bit when we've been going through the text. And us three in particular have done a lot of workshop stuff mm-hmm. together where we've explored that text to see what exactly the relationships are and were and who they are and were. And Bill, we sense that he saw Fagin as a father, mm. but ultimately was let down with him when he realized that yeah. he probably wasn't interested in him from that perspective. We also think that he doesn't have a pure love for Nancy. It's a motherly mm. love, we think.
Right.
Which is why we think he's very jealous of Oliver.
Right.
Who mm. steals that motherly love away from him. He doesn't, so it's a motherly affection
yeah.
that he has. So he is an incredibly lost soul mm. and an incredibly dark soul as a result, because everyone that he has had any faith in his life have ultimately let him mm. down.
I think lost soul is the word I would use. He's incredibly angry at everyone and everything, but he doesn't really know why. Like, I think he hates Fagin and also relies on him. Like, there's a point towards the end, isn't there, when mm. he's committed an act, which we maybe won't talk about here, but he... And he says to Fagin, well, what do I do? Where do I go? So I think he does still see himself as under Fagin's protection.
He wants to believe that yeah. Fagin will help.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe,
I think
yeah.
he ultimately wants someone to help him yeah. somewhere, and no yeah. one ever does.
No.
And that has resulted in psychosis. Yeah.
But Nancy feeds him and looks after him and is mm-hmm. affectionate towards him, and he doesn't really give him much back. But mm-hmm. I think he does like that in a way. But
mm-hmm. And Oliver is just pure light mm. throughout. Mm. He's the continuation of innocence, mm. Mm. And he sort of knits his way through the fabric of the story in terms of that innocence and his effects then on each of us as main characters. Fagin doesn't know. Initially he tries to recruit him as he would any other, but then he says a strange line saying, "You're a brave boy, very brave," and it's a questioning line, because I think he's never seen someone like this before. He's never encountered yeah. innocence as pure as this.
Yeah,
and I think ultimately that's what Nancy warms mm-hmm. to as well. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think Bill doesn't like mm. because it's the antithesis of mm. of him.
Yeah,
mm. I think Sykes is the only person who doesn't warm to Oliver. Oliver seems to bring out the best in people.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
except him. He's mm-hmm. the only one who's not mm. touched by him.
Somehow sees him as a threat.
Yeah, whereas yeah. everyone else is like, that's just a yeah. lovely little boy, and Sykes is...
But I think Fagin's worried about him, because mm. he's going to upset the apple cart. Mm. Yeah. He doesn't, mm. He's not like the others, yeah, and doesn't. Something's going to happen. Mm. So he's a bit panicky, mm. I would suggest.
It changes the dynamic of the exactly. team. Yeah. Yeah.
I would say as well, after all that, it's a feel-good show, I think, yeah. mostly. Because mm. yeah. we made that sound pretty mm. depressive. And it yeah, is, in parts. But I think that's what makes it such an interesting show.
But any Dickens tale is.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, there's such massive themes that yeah. it deals mm. with. They're mm. not they're not light-hearted.
No, it's very dark in places, isn't it?
But that's what makes it an incredible story. Mm.
Yeah.
But then once he gets away from Fagin and his gang, he gets found by his grandfather.
Mr. Brownlow, yes, who recognises some features of Oliver, and interestingly bumps into him after being robbed by him yeah. In a street. So yeah, no, he ultimately finds where he should be, or should have been all along.
Yeah,
and there's hints at how that happened in the musical at the beginning and at the end. So it's mm. a sort of true epic tale mm. of everything happening.
I think there's some great songs as well. Yeah. Everybody that goes will know, Pick a Pocket or Two.
Um Papa.
Yeah. Yeah, Where Is Love? Mm.
Who will buy?
Who Will Buy? Yeah. Yeah, so there's some great uplifting mm. parts yeah, to some of those songs as well. And there's
and
fun,
of course,
you know.
Food Glorious Food as well.
Food Glorious Food. And there is fun, the children are fun. Mm. Fagin can be quite fun with the children as well, and Nancy is fun as a character. Mm. She's entertaining and mm. she enjoys having mm. a good time.
Yeah.
There's tragedy there, but there's mm. also some,
yeah, and
there's warmth to the characters as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, and again, that's something that we've workshopped on is moving from that light to dark.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm. And in particular in first versus second act.
Yeah, big difference, isn't it?
And then ensuring that we get the audience to see that move, mm. Because it does shift.
Mm-hmm.
Shift tonally.
Mm. Yeah. Very much.
Mm. Yeah. So looking at the production side of things, we've got Jeremy Tustin back mm-hmm. as director again. And is it Chris Sylvan back again as the MD?
Yep, he is. I worked with Jeremy before in Les Mis.
Yeah, I worked with him in Les Mis first time round and also Thoroughly Modern Millie. So I've worked with Jeremy a couple of times before.
I didn't realise Thoroughly Modern Millie was Jeremy.
Yeah, it was. He gave me my first lead role. Uh-huh. And Marilyn Maudsley is the assistant director as well.
Yes. Is there an assistant musical director or is Chris just handling everything on that side of things?
No, Tracy's the dance captain. So that's our production team.
But they're there all the time, aren't they?
Because Chris is on Ireland, we don't really need an assistant.
Of course, yes.
And then Mary, obviously, accompanying as throughout, which has been great.
Mary Lever, on the piano, yeah. So in the cast, then, let's have a look through. Obviously, so we've got the big three here today. So Vicky, you're Nancy. Mm-hmm. Mark, I nearly called you Dockers then. Mark. Mark, you're Fagin.
I am.
And Jonathan, you are Bill Sykes. Mm-hmm. Away from those, we've got Chris Mabry as Mr. Bumble and Katie Neal as Mrs. Bedwin. Mm-hmm. We have David Lyons as Mr. Sowerbury and Lindsay Smith as Mrs. Sowerbury. Mm-hmm. We have Daniel Laurie as Noah Claypole. Mm-hmm. Dr. John Snelling as Mr. Brownlow. Mm-hmm. Nicola Openshaw as Widow Corney. Mm-hmm. Mike Devereaux as Dr. Grimwig. Mm-hmm. Carrie Haziel as Old Sally. Matilda Clegg as Shell. I mean, there's lots of parts there, isn't there?
Mm. Yeah, and also strong principal cast because all of those have, you know, quite a lot of experience in prior shows. Mm-hmm. So it all sort of adds weight.
They're doing a good job. Yeah.
And then with the kids, then I mean, obviously there's several of the members there of the adult ensemble. Yeah. But with the kids, we've got two teams. We've got Team Pick and Team Pocket.
It's easy
to say. We've got a bit of a next generation here with Team Pick, haven't we? Because we've got William Cowley, son of Kate and David Cowley.
Yeah, recent NODA winner, Kate Cowley.
Yes, must say congratulations to Kate for winning Best Actress for...
Annie Get Your Gun.
I always want to call it Kiss Me Kate. I don't know why. That's a different show from a long time ago. We also have Morgan Smith as Oliver Twist. Now his mum, Lindsay's in the cast. Mm-hmm. Yes. And also I noticed his sister's in it as well.
Yeah.
Charlotte's in there as well.
Yeah.
Which is marvellous. Yeah. And then Bet is played by Holly Callow.
Yes. Yeah.
I think this is her first show. And I think she's a Christine's girl, I think, isn't she?
She is.
So she's no stranger to the stage.
No, she's been great.
Yeah, she has.
And then in Team Pocket, we have Thomas McAleer as Artful Dodger.
Yeah.
We've got Parker Kizik as Oliver Twist.
Yeah.
And Emma Hill, who is Bet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, Emma's a performer from Move It.
Yeah.
So she's no dancer.
Both the Bets are fantastic.
They have,
She is incredibly flexible. I've never seen anyone as flexible as Emma. She's a fantastic dancer.
She's a lovely dancer. And you do see the Bets get to do some of the ensemble as well. And you do see, you definitely see the youngsters shining. You can see them playing the lead roles in future, definitely.
And Bet's sort of Nancy's right-hand man, isn't she?
Yeah,
she's the best friend and the shadow.
Yeah. And, you know, they are so young, but they're so professional. You know, to be working with these young children that have so much, you know, they have the stagecraft that you wouldn't expect them to have at that age, the commitment and the professionalism. They're a good bunch to work with, and two very, very different Olivers, I think, the Olivers and the Dodgers, obviously two completely different characters, Oliver and Dodger, but they've cast them well, and you know they don't imitate each other. They each take their own kind of approach to the role, which is nice to see as well.
They bring something different,
definitely.
Don't they? Each of them bring something different too, which is it's great for us because you know
keeps you on your toes.
Yeah, no, exactly, and keeps us working, and you know, which you want to do when you're on stage, and you never want to slip into the mundanity of doing the same thing over and over again. You want to be challenged on stage, and they definitely do that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they're alternating performances then. So we've got Team Pocket are doing Saturday the 16th of March, Wednesday the 20th, Friday the 22nd, and then the matinee on the 23rd.
Yeah.
And then Team Pick are doing the other ones. So they're on Sunday the 17th, Tuesday the 19th, Thursday the 21st, and Saturday to the 23rd evening performance.
That's right.
So if you know either of those kids, those are the dates that you want to go into to see them.
Yeah, that's it.
And they're really
welcome
young
twice
as well.
Parker and Morgan are eight.
Yeah, they're really young. It's incredible, really.
Absolutely. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
You know, that they, and it's such a big role.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Doesn't faze them, does it?
Not at all. Learning your lines is one thing as an eight-year-old, but actually, you know, acting and developing a character, I mean, I think I was just... too busy playing with sand at that age. I just, it's unbelievable. That,
I wondered where you were going then for a second.
Oh, yeah.
and the singing is like from both
it's,
of them.
Yeah, when you think about it, eight years old, it's amazing.
Really. Yeah, it is.
And all Fagin's gang, to be fair, are I think average age probably about 9.
They're really young.
And William and Thomas sort of bring up that average age because they're both 12.
Yeah.
Thomas was in Full Monty as well, and Parker, who's the other Oliver, is Bailey Kizik's brother.
Right, okay.
And his mum's also in Tory as well.
And so, I've just noticed that Aylin Cowley's in the youth ensemble as well.
Yes,
so,
So
that's one of the other Cowleys.
No, there's families about.
There's quite a lot of them. Yeah.
But that's, I think that's traditional in Manx theatre, isn't it?
So, certainly is.
And Oliver's a great show to do that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And of course, the other important member of the cast, you know, just to round out the never work with children and animals, case we're doing both, following your own pup idol competition, you've got Casper.
Yeah, he's lovely, lovely dog. Yeah, he just spends all his time licking people. But he does look the part. He's a strong boy. I wouldn't.
Yeah.
But he's dead friendly. Like he's really friendly. But
is he a bulldog?
He's a staffy.
He's a staffy.
He? He's really really affectionate. But he gets quite excited in the room because there's obviously a lot going on. But he's quite chilled with it.
Yeah.
Like he will yip and bark, but he's generally just. He just wants to be entertained, so if you give him a treat, he's good. We just need to be careful with what we're doing with him, haven't we? Because
And his handlers are ever present, and we've been told, you know, to respect the animal. And so only Jonathan and Vicky are probably the only ones who go up to the dog and actually pet
interact.
The dog. Everyone else sort of stays clear and gives room to it because it would be unfair otherwise. But the dog has to be there in rehearsals because it has to get used to the noise and the atmosphere. He did bark quite a lot the first time because Jonathan's whacking tables and whacking people and the dog sort of thinking what the hell's going on. And then Vicky's trying to feed it some
treats
so it doesn't bark. It's all quite amusing.
But he eats all the treats before I have time to get them out of the bag on that occasion, so pace it out now. But but no, he's doing well, and it's nice to be able to have Bullseye there. He's what everyone expects when they come to see Oliver.
Yeah.
They want to see Bullseye, don't they?
You do,
it's great to be able to have that.
Great. And this is the 75th anniversary show for Max and Braxton.
It's hard to believe, isn't it? But so they wanted to make a mark.
Yeah.
Mm.
Do something a bit special.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I think the beauty of Oliver is, you know, just how big the cast is and all ages and animals.
Yeah.
Really does encompass everything. So I think it was a good show to pick.
Yeah.
For your 75th.
Yeah. I talked with Tony Hawks back on the 50th episode, and he was saying about how popular Oliver is. And with the list and the amount of times that he's played, well, not Oliver himself, but he's played Fagin, he's played Bill and other parts. He played Noah Claypole as a younger man as well.
Yeah.
But it just sort of says, you know, it kind of came around sort of every 8 to 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was sort of Noah was good for him when he was in his late teens, 20s. And then Bill was good when he was in his 30s.
Yeah,
and then Fagin come along as he's in his 40s.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It just hit right for him. And obviously to show that this show has come around so often and still sells just goes to show how good and how popular a show it is.
I think there's a lot of nostalgia that's wrapped in that show.
Yeah.
You know, everyone's seen Oliver at some stage in their life, so it's almost like a moment to pass down to their own children. And
everyone's familiar with the film as well.
Yeah.
Film and the show are very, very true to each other, aren't they?
And you talked about Tony before as Fagin. Mm. That was my very first ever show at the Gaiety. Tony was Fagin, and we were talking about who the original Olivers and Dodgers were, and it's amazing when you think of some of those Olivers and Dodgers and what they've gone on to do.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Caron was Oliver. When I first did it, and obviously he's now Les Mis in the West End.
Yep.
We had, last time Oliver was on, we had Joe Locke.
Yes.
And now he's a superstar, obviously.
Of Broadway.
So, Morgan and Parker will watch this space.
He'll
be seeing the next Hollywood superstar. Or the Dodgers, William. Thomas, of course.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Lorcan hasn't quite managed to scale the same dizzy heights.
No, but he's does, only young. He's well got time.
He's a work in progress.
Yeah, but he must have been young when he did that.
Yeah.
Because Tracy McCann had one of the programmes out showing us, didn't she? Yeah, and then we saw, I was like, wow, there's Lorcan.
Yeah.
And he was Oliver or Dodger? Dodger.
He was Dodger.
Yeah.
But he looks really young.
Yeah, Oliver, I think it was my first ever show that I actually saw live.
Yeah.
And I have some weird memory of it. I grew up in the Cayman Islands, and I have a weird memory of my mum bringing me to a school performance of it.
Right.
And so it's obviously lodged there. Mm-hmm. And then it was my first show ever in the Gaiety was Oliver.
Yeah.
So it's massive for me to then come back, cycle back, and then and feel the pressure of trying to emulate, you know, Tony and how brilliant he was at playing that role.
Mm-hmm. So that was your first.
And Ben, obviously.
Ben
and
Ben,
right?
Fantastic.
So that was your first show in the Gaiety. Then what would be your first role?
First role, that was my first show, and...
What, 2002?
10.
Oh, 2010, right.
Yeah. The second.
I was approached in the gym changing rooms by Matt James.
Haven't we all been there?
Haven't we?
I've been there many a time. And I think we were talking about My Fair Lady that was coming up.
Yeah.
And he saw that I had a bit of an interest in, because I was talking to him about it, he disappeared behind a locker and then he emerged again, say, what would you say if I told you in 6 weeks' time you'd be walking on to the Gaiety stage with Oliver on your shoulders and Consider Yourself? You know the song Consider Yourself? And I was like, yeah. And he went, would you do that? And I was like, yeah, ring me. Not expecting a phone call. And then lo and behold, not knowing Matt too well, he did obviously ring me, and I went down and watched a run through, watched Tony perform, Gary Corkle, Trish Farger, some Alex Toohey, Catherine Toohey, some fantastic performers, and I was just absolutely blown away by their run through.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, because I didn't know whether I was going to do it or not, but I was so blown away that I was what an opportunity.
Yeah.
So I sort of, John Cumberledge, who was the director, just threw me in and said, off you go. And by the way, you're going to learn to juggle in 6 weeks, and you're going to juggle some potatoes at the start of the song of Consider Yourself. And that was the theatre journey began. Yeah. So straight after that, I auditioned for My Fair Lady and got the role of Professor Carpathy, who was the man who was to oust the, I've now forgotten, Audrey Hepburn's
Eliza Doolittle. Yeah.
Was to oust Eliza Doolittle at the ball.
Yes.
As a false. And I think I got that. Tony Finnegan gave me that role, and I think it was only because of the stupid laugh that I developed.
Brilliant.
Yeah, and it was, and then I think that was the start of just sort of character roles with slight nuances, people say weird nuances that I
creepy.
Seem to get.
Yeah. Creepy is a word.
Creepy is a word, yeah.
I mean, there are a few interesting ones there through the years. I mean, there's Common Gear and the Producers, Trekkie Monster and Avenue Q, the Child Catcher in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. That must have been a fun one.
That was fantastic because it's not actually a very big role, to be honest with you. There's very few lines, but you have complete freedom in that role to do whatever you want and
be as horrible as possible
and be as horrible and as creepy as possible. And many a night I had to go to the stage door at the back to comfort some parent whose child was screaming in their arms, and had to comfort little Tarquin because he was going to have nightmares that night, and telling them that it's okay, I'm actually a normal person. I think in the Sunday matinee, they had six families leave directly after my entrance.
Oh, so. You know you've done a good job there.
Yeah.
I did that with a panto. I was the flesh creep. It was Jack and the Beanstalk.
Yeah.
And I was out right at the very start. There's like a big clap of thunder, and I came out, and I had a kid crying by the end of my second line one night. My work here was done.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's what I'm here for.
I did ask Chris whether we could place a stooge child in the audience, and I was was thinking we could maybe run out and grab the child in, just to ramp up the fear even more. He said no.
Probably a good idea.
Yeah, exactly. I think I'd be locked up.
Yeah. Vicky, how about you? How did you get started? And what was your first role?
So I think the first time I went on the big stage, I was around 4, and it was with Christine Wild Theatre School, and it was Oliver at the Villa Marina, actually. Oh, wow. My late mum used to tell the story that she spent an absolute fortune on costumes and tickets to bring the whole family to watch, and I walked on one side of the stage, did a couple of spring points and tossed it off the other side. So that was my first production. First decent role was Millie in Thoroughly Modern Millie when I got back from university.
That was a brilliant show.
And that was just a dream role, like Nancy's a dream role. They come about sometimes, you know, with families. It's hard to commit to, you know, doing these productions every year because it's such a huge commitment of time. But, you know, when a role like that comes up, you just know you don't want to let it pass.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have to make some sacrifices for that, which we all do. And our families do too, as you well know.
Yeah.
I think, you know, with a role like Nancy, for me, you know, it's worth that.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes a role just comes along that's just so perfect for you. Yeah, thinking, I can't not do this.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, it feels like it's perfect for you, but you don't know if you're perfect for the director.
Yes.
You know, Nancy, I think in the book, she's only about 17. And I'm 41 today.
Oh, happy birthday.
So,
Yay!
So you know, whether I was what the director was looking for or not, you don't know when you walk into that room. But, you know, I think that there is some flexibility in the way that it's written, that, you know, Nancy does have some life experience behind her.
Yeah.
And she doesn't necessarily need to be a particular age. So you know, you put yourself forward and you hope that you'll be what they're looking for, but you know, I'm not always going to be the right age for those roles. So when Oliver comes back around again, maybe I'll have to have a think about a different part that time around.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those things as well, certainly with certain bits of casting, it depends on how old your other players are.
Yeah, definitely.
If you'd had a 27-year-old Bill Sykes, sorry, Jonathan.
Oh, well.
You know, a 41-year-old Nancy would have looked a bit odd.
Yeah.
But
does.
You know, if you're both more of a closer age, then you know, you can get away with it. Then, doesn't.
And there's other things. You know, I'm really short. If the Olivers were taller, you know, they are only young.
Yeah.
If they were older and slightly taller, then it probably wouldn't have worked because they'd be taller than Nancy, which wouldn't work.
Yeah.
In itself. So it's hard to cast a show, isn't it? There's who's right for the role in terms of, you know, ages, looks, you know, their ability to understand the character and performance. Experience and things like that. But yeah, it's a great opportunity to be able to play a role with such depth. It's a challenge, like we said. You know, we spent quite a lot of time together really drilling down into every word to try and understand what's the intention of this, you know. And some of those relationships are complex, aren't they? You know, it's not as simple as, you know, they're the bad guy, she's the good girl, you know, because actually some of the things Nancy does are wrong as well.
Yes.
You know, she does things that, you know, that you wouldn't necessarily say are the right things to do.
Yeah.
And she does them out of, you know, misdirected love for somebody that is never really going to give her what she needs and what she wants.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're the most enjoyable roles to play.
Great. Jonathan, how about yourself? How did you get started?
It's quite a long story, but I'll try and keep it short. So I just started teaching at Balcomine.
Yep.
I just started seeing a girl who was also a teacher there, and she said, you sing in a band, don't you? And I said, yeah, I sing in a blues band. She said, oh, I've just joined this singing society and they need men. So I thought, okay, that's all. I quite like doing a bit of singing, plus we were quite new in the relationship, I wanted to kind of impress her and spend
do
a bit of time with
please,
her.
Yeah, yeah.
Not to impress with my singing, just to kind of impress her by saying, yeah, I'll do that with you. So it was a Jeremy Tustin show, but so I just turned up on a Sunday.
Yeah.
And they must have been thinking, who the hell is this guy? Like, I hadn't auditioned.
Yeah.
And I didn't know, like, you don't just turn up to a show. And I don't think she did.
Yeah.
So I remember people looking at me like, who is this guy? Plus, I'd been playing for Nomads the day before and knocked myself semi-silly.
Yeah.
And I had big cuts on my face and I'd been out the night before. So I probably must have looked a state. But no one really said anything, probably through politeness. So I just kind of stood in a line and started singing along. And John Short.
Yeah.
Someone said, stand next to him and just listen and see if he can sing, to John Short. And after a while, John Short said, he sounds like he can sing.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Right.
So it was a bit of a random way in. Yeah. So, I didn't audition.
I think you've told the podcast what your role was.
So I started off as ensemble. And then I must have just been the right height, age for a load of things. So they went, right, you can be the prince at the start. So I was the prince at the start before he transforms.
So this was Beauty and the Beast.
This was Beauty and the Beast, sorry, yeah. And then I was Mr. Cake Slice, of course, with his golden slip-ons.
The seminal role.
Yeah, and his strap-on cake slice. And I was also, I don't know if I want to spoil the magic, but I was another role as well, which, I probably should have been trained for, but ended up with just getting thrown off the stage every night by Alex Tui. and stabbed and killed. But it was amazing because I didn't know what to expect. And it was great crack because it was ensemble and it was a big cast. So there was a load of us in the bottom of the stage, like the crew room, past the old machinery.
Yeah,
I was in the crew room for Oliver. There was a whole load of newbies. It was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, we were all new, I think. Great camaraderie. And that was it. So it was a complete accident how I got into it. And amazing how things work out. Yeah. So
that was it. And then these days it's number one, yeah?
The
number
what?
Number one dressing room.
Or is it still
the boys are number two?
Number two is always the...
I don't know if people want to be undressed with me because I like really, really loud, aggressive music. And I don't think Ian was particularly thrilled with my music selection because he likes Billy Joel and it quite chilled, whereas I like it really loud and angry, so I'd quite try and get in before him every day and turn my music on.
Yes, the musical choices in Seven Brides, Seven Brothers were interesting in number two, weren't they?
Yeah.
We have quite eclectic tastes.
I tend
to go for rap music. Yeah. Jonathan's like sort of thrash metal.
Rage Against the Machine. Yeah. But then we always try and walk out to Top Gun.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Just to fire you up and just send you on your way down to the stage to perform. Yeah.
But I think it was number one last two times for shows because I had loads of... I was heavily made up or prosthetic.
Yeah.
So I had to be number one. But yeah. Number one isn't the best room because it's kind of the storeroom, isn't it?
Yeah.
So everyone puts bottles of water and stuff. So there's people forever coming in and out of that one. So.
I've only been in it when I was child catcher because of makeup.
Yeah. I don't think it denotes seniority or principles. It's just... Yeah, it's where you're quickest to people can run in and pull bits of rubber off your face.
But to be honest with you, the number two is fantastic because you want to be in a room with a number of people.
Yeah.
Because the best thing about shows is the camaraderie.
Yeah.
And the most fun I've had on shows has definitely been as a result of a dressing room and a definite vibe that we've got in a dressing room that then brought onto stage and then afterwards as well. And I think you were talking about Seven Brides, Neil, and I think we can all say that that was probably one of the best fun shows that all of us had done at the time because the camaraderie was incredible in that show.
Great big bunch of lads as well.
I think it's my favourite show.
I think it was for actual fun.
Yeah.
And we all clicked and we all just got on really well.
I remember there being, and whether it was the Sunday matinee or it was just one show, we all came in and we all would just all feel a little bit flat. And then the music went on and then we got ourselves mood and then chest bumps and we're away.
Chest bumps and Top Gun and Monster and we're away.
You didn't want to be in that dressing room.
It was an interesting smell in there.
I was pulling
my food.
Yeah, chest bumps.
Chicken and broccoli.
topless chest bumping.
Don't chest bump Alan Widdop, we'll end up in the wall.
In the clothes.
Anyway, let's move on.
That all got a bit Top Gun there, didn't it? Baby oil.
It did a little bit.
You're listening to the Manx Theatre Podcast with Neil Cullen.
What would be the favourite roles that you've played? Jonathan?
Oh, my favourite. My favourite show was probably Seven Brides.
Yeah.
Favourite role's really hard because they've been so different. I'd say the role I put most into is probably Quasimodo. And in that sense, I enjoyed it because I was proud of what I'd done. I don't know what people thought of it, but I put so much into it. Like, it really nearly killed me doing that. Because, again, it should have been for a 20-year-old and I was 40 at the time. I really enjoyed that. Saigon was mad because it was only my third show. Yeah. And Tara was over this West End director and it was just insane because I didn't know what I was doing.
And you were Chris, weren't you?
Yeah, and it was just insane. It was my first lead, and these big songs, and everyone was saying, this is such a massive show, and there's people coming over from UK to watch it, and it was just like, this is crazy. That was good. But I think Seven Brides was just brilliant, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was never a bad time in that.
Definitely my favourite,
so enjoyable,
fun show to have done. And it started all... Do you remember Tara had us all doing acrobatics?
Yeah. Was that a Friday night in Loch Promo Church Hall?
Yeah, we had, like, put crash mats out. Yeah. And then we were all trying to do, like, breakdancing.
Leapfrogging over Nick
Payne. Yeah.
So it's just good fun.
Yeah. Donkey was great too, Shrek.
Yeah,
I have to say, because it was just pure fun, and it was in the middle of lockdown, and I think people loved watching that show because it was just daft, and because you can do anything with Donkey because he's not because he's Donkey.
just an escape from reality. Really.
Yeah, and people can't go, well, that wasn't very realistic. I'm like, it's a talking donkey. But and that was, and I love working opposite Ian. Like, I really, something clicks between Ian and I. He probably would disagree, but I just we really work well together. I think,
yeah,
because we were lucky to do two on the bounce.
Yeah,
and he's without getting really gushy, Ian is such a generous person on stage. He'll never do anything that won't help you. He's brilliant like that.
He's so sincere,
isn't he? And he always wants to make you better, and he's great.
We're seeing that at the moment, aren't we, with rehearsals for Jersey Boys as well?
Yeah, no, exactly. Neil and I are performing in Jersey Boys in July, which should be good fun.
Yes.
Both have fun roles in that. We can reenact Goodfellas and Sopranos.
Yeah.
We're very much looking forward to that, but Ian is one of the Jersey Boys, and I think he went in to do his audition, and I believe sort of blew them away in his audition. He's just a natural.
Yeah, what voice?
Yeah. So, Dockers, what's your favourite part then, favourite show?
Yeah, so my favourite part is probably Thénardier, because it's probably the most challenging role, because I don't read music.
Mm-hmm.
So, bearing in mind that was all sung
and
very much had to be in time with the music, I think Julian Power had to have quite a bit of patience with me and my mistreatment of the music at times, in terms of the beats and coming in at
the music is just a guy.
And then he sort of learned that I was pretty much going to do my own thing anyway, and then he just followed what I did.
He was great.
So he's brilliant for doing that. So Thénardier was probably my most challenging, bearing in mind that it was all sung. Carmen Gear was challenging because it was, despite what people think, being extremely camp on stage was difficult for me.
Because you'd have to butch it up a bit, wouldn't you?
Exactly. Have to dig deep for that one.
So I was very light on my loafers in that role, and my Cuban heels, actually.
Yeah, that was great, sure.
And I was... David Artis and I were husband and husband.
Yes.
And we enjoyed that tremendously as between us. It was just very good fun. And we sort of just were allowed to do whatever we wanted to do in rehearsals. And so that was good fun. And then the other role that I loved doing, and one we'd done together, is Trekkie and Avenue Q.
Of course,
and again, that was just a show where we were just allowed to let loose.
Yeah.
And again, the vibe in that, everyone was incredible. Yeah. Like, real.
Just so much
such
fun.
A small cast, but everyone just gelled. And
Did Ian again?
Yeah.
And Boyan.
Yeah, Boyan. But we always talk about this, don't we? And how the fact we messed around solidly for 6 weeks, and then we found ourselves on the Gaiety steps, just about to go on, and we were like, "Wow, this is people."
this is so.
We just kind of forgot to actually practice.
It.
Yeah,
we just messed about in rehearsals, Jonathan and I, we're bad for doing that, aren't we?
And then we really panicked because we thought there's an audience out there. So we haven't taken any of this seriously.
We had 6 weeks of rehearsals doing nothing.
Yeah.
And then we were about to go on stage, and we're like, how do we do this seriously without laughing at each other?
Because you were Trekkie Monster, weren't you? And Jonathan, you were Gary Goldman.
But you just used to make stuff up in the middle of the show, which then we'd all have to not laugh, and it was really hard.
I think those are dangerous roles for me when...
Yes, when you're allowed to do what you want.
Exactly.
Vicky, how about you?
Probably have to revert back to Les Mis as well. I was Eponine in the first time Les Mis was done, the Isle of Man.
Yeah.
And I think it was just a role that I never, ever thought was within reach. You know, Les Mis had never been done, I don't think, by an amateur society.
Mm-hmm.
And it came out of the blue.
Yeah.
And it was another one where there was just no way I was letting that one go. So, that was just an amazing opportunity to be able to play that part in a show that I'd sort of grown up sneaking my dad's Les Mis CD because I wasn't allowed to listen to it because it was inappropriate at the time. I must have been really young, but I used to sneak it and listen to it. And so to then be able to go on stage and do that show was pretty amazing.
I have a confession about that, actually.
Have you?
In that,
did you steal my dad's CD as well?
it was the first show I watched in the Gaiety at your Les Mis.
Oh,
and I was invited along and I refused to go because I said, why would I watch a Village Hall production? I hadn't watched something in the Gaiety.
Wow. Yeah.
And I sat up in the gods, prepared to hate it. And I was absolutely astounded by the talent, and including yourself.
Oh,
it was incredible. And that subsequently led to DQ sponsoring the next production, which was Your Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's probably where it started, rather than, you know, other than the performance, was watching Your Les Mis.
And it does, you know, going to watch the theatre is what I remember going to watch Guys and Dolls.
Yeah.
And back to Tony Hawk's, I think he played the lead role. Jackie Hawks played the lead.
I wish I'd seen that one. I hear so many wonderful stories about how amazing this production was.
And I, you know, I'd never seen anything like that. My dad was in it and he dragged me along one night and I reluctantly went. And after watching the first one, I went every single night and I sat in the box with, I think, whoever used to be the chairman at the time, and watched every production.
Yeah.
And I think that's where it comes from, doesn't it? Going and watching it and having that experience as an audience member, and then saying, I want a bit of that. I want to get up there and do it myself.
For me, I was part of Barbara Gale's Gale Force as a kid. And then I'd got involved with the Peel Pantaloons for a few years. Mm-hmm. And I was invited down to a Manx Operatic Society rehearsal. We'd finished like the Saturday night. And on the Sunday, Anthony Williams was over. It was Beauty and the Beast pantomime. And myself, Jonathan Io, Grainne Jochen, Ben Hartley. Yeah, the four of us. We were invited down to watch rehearsals with a view of us, you know, coming down and joining for the next show.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat at the front and watched them blocking, and I would have joined in right there and then
done
Christmas performance.
Yeah.
Literally 4 weeks later, I was back for auditions for Hot Mikado, and that was it.
Yeah.
Never looked back. It's been brilliant.
Yeah. And we're lucky. We're so lucky, aren't we, to have those experiences.
Yeah.
To be able to be able to perform in the Gaiety, doing these huge productions, working with, you know, fantastic professional directors, musical directors.
Yeah.
You know, it's just amazing to have that opportunity. And for young people growing up in the Isle of Man to be able to get access to all these productions, you know, is great as well, isn't it? So
I
suppose there's no coincidence that a lot of them have gone on to be very famous outside, bearing in mind the opportunities
they've had here.
Culture really does play quite a large part in the Isle of Man and the makeup of the island, doesn't it?
I think we say this every time, you know, we're so fortunate to have such an amazing place like the Gaiety Theatre to go and play.
What an incredible place.
Every time you're in it, it's a privilege, isn't it, to be on stage?
And, you know, when we're all doing our vocal warm-ups, we all catch ourselves at times just staring up at the ceiling in awe.
But the dome.
That smell
hasn't changed.
Oh, yeah, that smell when you walk in the back door of the theatre, it hits you, you know, and it's like, for me, it's like I'm 8 years old again doing a Christine Wilde show, you know.
The nostalgia.
It's no place like home.
No.
That's true. But it's funny, like you were saying about your first... your first show at the Gaiety, I think my father-in-law was the same. He came over to watch Les Mis.
Yeah.
And I think he was expecting a kind of, this will be nice. You know, I'm sure they'll try hard. And he was like, what did I just... Because he didn't expect it to be.
Yeah.
He thought, he was like, that is incredible. He just was blown away by it. Because again, he thought, it's just a few amateurs, you know, it'll be a bit twee. And he thought, that was incredible. Mm. So,
and I think people don't realise just... the performers in these, and you've already alluded to it, Neil, in terms of a background in, you know, the dance schools here, and a lot of the performers have gone and done drama degrees or courses away, and have been professionals themselves, and, you know, had their equity card. And so when people say, oh, you know, you're seeing a show as good as a professional, so in many sense, many of them are professionals.
Yeah,
many of them are drama teachers, and or, as I said, have performed, you know, as a professional across. So we're extremely lucky.
Yeah,
to have that talent available, I think, on Ireland. Yeah, so I probably take that for granted now, but when I first started, I was just in awe of everyone. You know, in awe of you two especially, and I thought, wow. Just being able to get on stage with you now is always a privilege.
Okay, let's have a little
shout out. Yeah.
Let's have a little change of tempo here. So what I've got here is a little quiz.
Oh no.
A little Oliver-based quiz.
Okay.
Now we can either do this one of two ways.
Yeah.
You can shout your name out and answer it, or we can write answers to all the questions and then we'll go through the answers at the end.
let's just
shout out then. Okay, right. So what do we need? So Jonathan, you just shout bullseye.
Okay.
Mark, let's go with Oliver, my dear.
My dear.
My dear. Okay. And Nancy.
Oompa-pa.
Okay, all right. Then. Okay, that's how we're going to go. Now I'm going to have to try and keep tallying the score now as well. Then. Okay. Right, okay. So some of these are, well, it's all about Oliver.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Some that you will know from the show.
Mm-hmm.
Some.
I'm hardly over there.
not so much luck for Jonathan then. Okay. Yeah. Some are just. They're facts about the show, so you might just have to have a guess at them.
Okay.
And others that I'd be... If you don't know...
Not impressed.
It's too late to
pressure.
Okay, so here we go. This is a place to like some tension music.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so question one. Oliver famously has an exclamation mark in its title. Name another show with an exclamation mark. Silence.
Oliver, my dear.
Oh, right, Mark.
Does Cabaret at the end?
No.
Bullseye. Does Anything Goes?
Yes, Anything Goes does.
Oh, well done.
Thank you.
You could have also had Oklahoma,
oh, yeah.
Hello Dolly, Mamma Mia, Something Rotten, Honk, and some of the lesser well-known ones are I Do, How to Be Successful in Business Without Really Trying, Disaster, Ubu, Fiorello, or Blame It on the Movies.
Oh. Fiorello, of course.
I think some of those sort of smaller American ones. It was just on Musical Theatre International that I found it. Right. Okay, now, this one, Dockers, you should be able to get this one.
Oh,
so,
no pressure.
Who played Fagin in the 1968 film?
Bullseye.
Oliver, my dear.
Oh, Bullseye's first.
I've forgotten that. Ron
Moody.
That's him.
You can't pause.
No, I know. I'm sorry.
Half a point each.
Yeah. You intimidated me there. Yeah. That's not good, is it?
Number three. What year did the original production open in the West End?
Oliver, my dear.
Ooh.
1960?
Yes.
Oh, nicely done.
And it opened 2 years later on Broadway.
Right.
Question four. Might be more difficult for Jonathan, this one. What's the opening number of the show?
Oliver, my dear. Food, glorious food.
Yes. He got there just a fraction of.
I didn't know.
So close.
I thought it was, but wasn't you?
Question number five. How many Olivier Awards did the original West End production win?
Oliver, my dear. Four.
Any advances on four?
Bullseye. Five.
Papa. Six.
The correct answer is none.
Oh,
it's a trick question because it came out in 1960 and the Oliviers didn't start till 1975.
It was just a wicked one.
I wasn't getting that. I'm going to admit it.
I've got a pub fact. Can I throw this in?
Yeah, go for it.
That I learned the other day. So, Jonathan, you famously auditioned for Bill Sykes in 2010 but didn't get it.
Not that Alex Toohey would ever remind me of that.
Someone else who is extremely famous who auditioned for Bill Sykes in the 1960 West End production was Michael Caine.
Yes.
No ways.
Yeah.
Also appearing in that production.
Not a lot of people know that.
Phil Collins.
What? He was in it.
Yep.
He was Oliver, wasn't he? Or Dodger? He was one of the kids. Something.
Barry Humphries was the Undertaker.
Yeah.
This is great. Well done. Good work.
He also played Fagin.
Michael Caine?
No, Barry Humphries.
I can see that.
Yeah, huge, big, long list of famous people that have played Fagin over the years, including Russ Abbott.
Yeah, I knew Russ Abbott had.
And Gary Wilmot.
What? Yeah. Rowan Atkinson, obviously.
Yeah. Yes, he was.
Jonathan Pryce was a really famous one.
Good, yeah.
Okay. Well, back to the quiz.
It's
question six, then. What was the name of the BBC TV talent programme that Sandbox appeared on that aimed at finding a new Nancy for the West End production?
Papa.
Oh, straight in there.
I'd do anything.
That is correct.
Yeah.
Oh, I've got 1 point, thank goodness.
Now, this one's a little tricky one. I think it's buried somewhere in the dialogue, so who's going to be the person to get this one?
Doing our own dialogue. So.
What is the name of Oliver's mother?
Papa.
Oh,
Agnes.
Correct.
What?
Right.
Right. She's catching up now.
That's impressive, yeah.
Like... And the last question.
Oh, no.
This is the, sorry, Jonathan, you're out of this.
Oh,
one,
great. Right?
Yeah. So it's whoever gets this between Vicky and Jonathan, between Vicky and Mark, is the winner. Question 8. What is the favourite diet of the workhouse
person? Oh, my dear. Gruel.
Grill?
Griddles.
Griddles.
Gruel.
No.
The favourite diet of the workhouse boys.
Mm. They don't like the gruel, do they? What do they want?
Oh, I thought
that was sausages? Irony. Oh.
No.
A custard?
It's 3 banquets a day.
Oh.
Our favourite diet.
Oh. You sneaky man.
Oh, sneaky. Right,
so I think you won that quiz.
So at the end of that, Jonathan, 0.5 point.
What? For real?
Mark, 2.5. And Vicky too.
I so Mark wins. There very often.
Well done.
But what year was it written? The Dickens. What year did he write it? I'm probably getting it wrong now. 1838, I think.
Oh right. Okay.
Yeah, wow, that's good, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It doesn't get me any points.
Lionel Bart.
Oh, here we go.
Couldn't.
I know this.
Couldn't write or read music.
Right.
So, and he's obviously the writer and composer of Oliver.
Yeah.
Couldn't write or read music. Had to hum the tunes.
Yeah.
And his friend, Thingy Rogers, wrote the music from Bart humming to him.
Wow.
Bob Crewe of the Jersey Boys is the same. He doesn't read or write music, doesn't play an instrument, and he would literally just hum and someone else would transpose it for him.
Right. Wow.
Didn't know that.
But at the end of that, Jonathan gets 5 bonus points.
Yeah, exactly. If only we put so much time into our characters as learning useless facts.
Okay, so just a couple of our newer questions that have come into the list. Yeah. What is the strangest or funniest thing that's happened to you on stage, and where have you managed to keep that from the audience, or has it just been too blatantly obvious that something's gone horrendously wrong?
So mine was in Les Mis, and I, for some reason, I got quite aggressive with Alex on stage, and that threw me completely.
Yeah.
And so I shouted the immortal line, "You know me," and then I forgot all my other words. So I had to continue singing over and over repeatedly, "You know me. You know me, 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 you know me," praying to God that Dandy, who would kick in and recognize the fact that someone was repeating their words.
Oh, yeah. No.
So I did that. I was mortified, and I thought, you know, the cast would throw their arms around me and console me. And I turned up the next night and I found... and probably about 1 million pictures of "You Know Me" posted all over the dressing room, all over behind
the
set.
Gaiety.
The entire set going into my number, "You Know Me," was posted everywhere. So yeah, thanks for that.
Facebook as well.
Yeah, it appeared. Yeah, and I think I got an award at the Ops Award for the "You Know Me" award.
Excellent.
Yeah,
so it should.
So that was a special moment, wasn't it? Yeah.
So I think they probably would have noticed that happening.
Well, weirdly, John Short, who played it when you did it, was in the audience that night, and he didn't seem to pick up on it. No. Or maybe he was just being polite. It was bad.
Jonathan?
I was thinking about this, and I don't know. The only one I can think of is funnily enough, another show with Mark. Was probably Seven Brides, The Town. Remember?
Yeah.
So one thing I can do quite well is learn words, and I tend not to trip up on them on stage. And I think we were quite far into Seven Brides, maybe 6 or 7 shows in, and all the brothers were on stage, so 6 people could have helped me out here, but you didn't. Thanks for that. And I was going through my lines, and I must have just kind of got a bit casual or switched off. Mm. And I got to a line, and I couldn't remember what it was, so I just said "town," and I knew it was something about a town. And I said something, I knew it was wrong, and the 6 brothers looking at me, and they just stood there, and I just said something else about town. we've got to go to the town. And I was like, guys, help. Yeah. And there's just six of them just stood
hey,
there.
Hey, let's go in a town because we need to get town.
Town-related
because
things.
Because the town's there's down the town.
Town in the town. And six people just stood there and watched me die on stage. And then I think that's, I can't think of anything. There's always stuff going wrong here and there. Oh, yeah, Les Mis. Wasn't funny or strange, but someone dropped one of the muskets off the barricade and I was dead and it landed right on the end of my finger. And I was like, ah! And that was not funny, but it was.
And then we prevented Dave Artis going on stage in Les Mis by our inane chat in the dressing room.
Did we?
And he missed his entrance.
Oh, I don't remember that. That's all his fault. Yeah. No, I was on stage.
Oh.
Yeah. But I do remember it. Being Dave Artis, you'd never have known.
No.
Like, he was just there, like, dead casual. And we were like, you totally missed that. But strange or funny.
I had a vibrating nose as a child catcher that shuddered every time I moved.
It was quite long, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. So it was quite disconcerting, which was quite good because apparently I had very tight leggings in that.
Right.
And Chris said that I had to change my undergarment because thankfully my nose was shaking or else other parts were really which wouldn't have been good in a good show like that.
Vicky, how about you?
I don't know if anything's happened in an actual production. I know that in Thoroughly Modern Millie I had about a 15-second change where I had to go into a lift and change in about 15 seconds, including a wig, and then come back on again in the new kind of modern outfit that she had, and in every rehearsal I then had to do a sort of flick back of the head in 1920s style choreography, and in every single dress rehearsal, tech rehearsal, the wig came off and I was there with my cut up tights on my head, including the night that the newspapers were in taking photographs, but thankfully I had Debbie Beck and Jackie Simpson, I think, hiding in the lift, helping me and clipping that wig within,
all the clips they could get in.
Every single clip they could get in 15 seconds. So thankfully it didn't happen in the real production. So fingers crossed I don't have any embarrassing, awful things happen with Nancy. Yeah. I've got no costume changes, so that's one good thing.
Yeah. A couple of years ago with Sweeney Todd, we'd come on to the point where it was the introduction of Pirelli, so the big contest is about to happen, and as the Beadle I had the whistle, I had the police whistle, and that's what I was going to use to start the competition with, and I'm walking on stage and I walk around and I'm saying hello to everyone as I do, and I walk around and I just looked down and I thought something's different. What's not right? Then I suddenly realized I didn't have the whistle, and I'm stood there down stage left watching the scene as it's unfolding. I'm going, I need the whistle. I mean, I can just do a whistle. I can whistle, because I've got a good loud whistle. Growing up on a farm, I've got a good loud whistle. I thought, no, I need my actual whistle. And I thought, actually, I've got plenty of time before I need to do it. So I just sort of wandered upstage slightly, wandered off into the wings, ran to the dressing room, grabbed my whistle, came back on, and like, just waited a second, and just walked on like that's exactly what was supposed to happen. Walked down to the front, literally just with about 30 seconds before my actual line going, yes, I shall be the judge for you. Yes.
In the middle of the show.
Nicely done.
Yeah.
That is good. We got told off in Seven Brides, Seven Brothers as well, didn't we?
Well, I've got a lot of strange funny things, but they're not me, they're from other people.
There was a scene where the brothers had to put their underwear in the washing basket. And
I remember this.
We decided. I can't remember whose decision this was. But
no, I was no part of this. Just to let you know, we're no part of it.
Funny one night, I would say Paul Castain
probably
had something to do with this.
Terrible influence.
And I think we decided one night that it would be amusing if the girls gave us their underwear and we put their underwear into the
wash basket. Yeah.
And we got told
You did. Nothing to do with me. I wasn't on stage. Yeah, you got told. I remember you getting told off. Trish was not.
Not just me, but
no, it was all of you. It was six very, very sorry looking brothers. Heads down, sorry.
Sorry.
Yeah. That's probably, the last time we took those sort of things into our own
Okay, so the other new question that we've got then is there a new show with a part that you'd love to play but you can't because you're now too old? I mean, for me, it's things like Dear Evan Hansen.
I tell you what would be great, and you would love this role too, Marty McFly in Back to the Future.
My God, yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But it's like you said before, reading that, I think none of us are too old to play a lot of parts that you think you might be too old to. It just depends on who's cast around you.
I mean, Tony in West Side Story or Troy Bolton.
Some of them must be like, that's ridiculous. Yeah, but I mean, like, again, when you think about Quasimodo, he's supposed to be 20.
I'd love to have been Danny in Greece.
Yeah,
I'm definitely too old and rough looking for that. Yeah. But I think, like, some people like Simon Fletcher and David Artis and, like, Gary Chapp, they don't age.
Yeah.
They all look younger than me and they're all like a lot older than me.
Now you say that. Now, the first time that we did Back to the 80s, mm-hmm. So David was Michael Feldman.
He was, yeah.
So he was like the cool dude.
Yeah, of course he was.
But around him was myself, Matt Quinn, and a couple of other lads. Mm. All of a, you know, we're not as old as him, but we're a much closer age to him than some of the others. Yeah. Then the second time the show came round, which was 2 years later, I think it was. I didn't do it, and neither did Matt Quinn or someone else. And then he had guys like Perry and James Turpin who were a lot younger than us. And suddenly it was like, he looks a bit old now next to those boys.
Well, same with the Jersey Boys.
Yeah.
I mean, we'd all love to be a Jersey Boy.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, those years have gone.
Yeah.
The other thing I would say for me is I've got to be honest, I don't watch shows, and I definitely don't keep up to date with the new ones. So there's probably loads of stuff. I've never seen Hamilton. Do you have Evan Hansen? Never seen it. Like, Dockers goes away to Mark, goes away to London all the time. Like, he's hardly ever on Ireland. And I say, like, what did you watch? And he says a show. I've never heard of that show. So there's probably loads of stuff. But parts that I really want to play, I think I'm probably still just about young enough. But I don't watch enough shows to know what there is out there, to be honest.
I think things change, don't you? See the even the professional actors, Leia Salonga, for example, played Eponine, and then she went later on, when she was a little bit older, she played Fontaine.
I saw her the day on TV,
we'll see
she looks
Samantha
amazing.
Samantha Box playing Fontaine one day as she goes back to try something new. I think as shows come back around, you know, you might be too old for the part you played last time, but you might be ready to play something a little bit different.
I've done Sweeney Todd twice now, and the first time I did it, I played young Tobias, which is the role that Joe Locke is now playing on Broadway. And then this last time round, I played the Beatle instead.
I'm hoping I Tony Hawk's it and do the next time it comes around. I want to Bagsy Fagan.
Yeah, you are the Fagan. You're the go-to Fagan.
Yeah.
I mean, to be honest, I mean, what a person to live up to. But he's not here for the show, but he sent me a lovely message.
Yeah.
And very supportive. Always has been. Yeah, what a legend.
He's one of them roles that you remember seeing. I remember seeing Tony do Fagin. Yeah, I remember seeing him do
amazing.
Scrooge.
Yeah.
Just those standout things. I remember it clear as day now. It must have been years ago, but brilliant.
Incredible. Yeah, when we sat and had that chat, it was just amazing at just how many different roles over the years that he's played. And you know, he was Nathan Detroit, or was he Sky Masterson? Yeah. I think he was Sky Masterson, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He's played the Mikado, he's played Fagin, he's played Bill Sykes, he's played God, anyone and everyone. It's just it's amazing, the list of parts that he's got just goes on and on and on.
Everyone talks in great reverence about him, and that is deserved, to be honest with you. I mean, he is a legend for a reason, and so supportive of all of us coming through.
Yeah. Brilliant. All right. Okay. Well, I think we're almost done. Just the last thing for us to do then is the Spotify playlist.
Mm. So, this is controversial, by the way.
Yeah.
Because Jonathan already has a song. So he's getting a second song.
Oh, well, you know, there've been other people.
Hey, hang on. This fella here, Neil Callan, he's got 10.
Well, that's because way back in 2020, after the first big lockdown, when we first set it up, myself and Neil King.
Oh, he's got 10 too, Neil King.
Yeah.
What?
No, that's true.
So I think you deserve it because you run the thing.
Well, that was just it. So we decided to set up this playlist, but we thought actually, you know, we need to put 10 songs in each just to get it going. Because who wants a playlist with 2 songs?
Yeah.
That's going to be the shortest, quickest playlist ever.
Yeah, that's not going
to So then every person then who's come onto the podcast ever since then has added a new song onto the list.
Yeah.
Now, these songs are songs that either they've performed, they are songs in shows that are their favourite shows, or that's just something that means something special to them, like Seasons of Love in there, that was sung at my wedding.
Okay.
Or our wedding, rather.
Mm.
Yeah. She was there too.
Pardon?
She was there too, hopefully.
Yes, she was, In fact, actually, it was sung by a group of our friends. There was Matt James, Susie Kelly, Julia Bratty, Alex Toohey, and Olivia O'Shea.
God, all the legends.
Along with David.
Yeah, all the legends and Alex Toohey.
Yeah.
And jokes.
And all accompanied by David Holland.
Wow.
That's
if, great, if only we'd known Sam Barks a little better at the time.
yeah.
But she was only just really on the scene at that point.
So. Yeah.
Right, so looking through the list then, let's have a look at some of the big hitters we've got.
He's going to kill me for that, isn't he, Alex?
I'm leaving that in.
In fact, he knows I love him.
I'll cut it out and I'll send it to Alex purposely.
Well, you said you had to mention about him beating me to... Like, you know, he has beat me to every audition we've ever gone against, so I've got to get my digs in where I can.
Okay, so looking through the list then, so some of the songs that we've got to choose from, we've got Perry O'Dea, he chose Being Alive from Company. Tony Eccles chose When I Grow Up from Matilda. Nikki Openshaw chose You Will Be Found from Dear Evan Hansen. Jonathan, last time you chose Damned for All Time from Jesus Christ Superstar, and it had to be the specific one from the 1978 film.
Paul Anderson.
Alex Toohey chose He's My Boy from Everybody's Talking About Jamie, and David Dawson chose Lost in the Wilderness from Children of Eden.
Oh, that's never interesting.
Yeah.
Artie was American Dream.
Yes.
American Dream, yeah. He was great doing that.
So, Vicky,
can you start with me?
Yes.
I'm going to add on. I think you've already had one from Waitress, which was Dandy Dancock's. I'm going to choose another one from Waitress, She Used to Be Mine.
Yes. Beautiful song.
It is. I don't think Waitress is. I don't think it's been available for amateur productions, has it?
Not yet.
Maybe one day, but it's an absolutely gorgeous song, and I think it's similar emotions, I think, that Nancy would hold.
Yeah.
You know, it's a woman with a toxic, abusive relationship and reflecting on herself, you know, who she used to be and, you know, how her life hasn't turned out the way she expected it to be. But it's a lovely song and I'm surprised it hasn't already been bagged, so it's going on there under my name.
Perfect.
I saw Sarah Bareilles do that on stage in London. Wow. She's incredible.
Wow.
Now, when Dandy chose that song, I'd heard of The Waitress, but I hadn't listened to it at that point. And I thought that she chose What Bacon Can Do. And it's actually What Baking Can Do. And I thought, well, she's a waitress, it makes sense. Baking. Right, okay, yeah, I understood that.
It'd be interesting knowing what else bacon can do.
What can bacon do? Mark, what's your choice?
So I, the most fun I had it doing a number was the porn song. But I don't know if that would actually make Spotify list, because it could take it into adults-only territory.
Yeah, I think.
So... I've chosen something a little bit off kilter, if you like, but it's definitely a song that resonated with me. I went to watch a show called Falsettos.
Right, yes.
Which was directed by
Tara,
who's directing us in Jersey Boys at the minute. Andrew Hilton was a musical director in that, and Joel Montague was performing in that at the time as well. He's now married to Carrie Hope Fisher.
Yep.
There was a guy called Daniel Boys, who's now playing King George in Hamilton on tour.
Yes, he was on the Joseph talent show.
Yeah, he's brilliant. So he sang a song called Father to Son.
Right.
And he makes some wrong decisions in his life, and he sits down opposite his 14-year-old son. And it's a song about those decisions, perhaps some of the guilt that he had in making those decisions, but asking his son not to judge him, and then talking to his son about making his own journey in life, his own decision making, and whatever, and he just, you know, and whatever he does, he would support him throughout that. Being a father of two boys and hearing that song, it struck a real chord with me. It's beautifully sung. The lyrics are quite stark and very beautiful from a father-son relationship. Definitely take a listen. I would say that.
No.
Lovely. Right. Jonathan?
I am going to pick music from a show which I had never listened to till Dave Dawson said, you just listen to this and see what you think. Hunchback, but not one I sang, because I think there was better songs. So I ummed and ahed between Esmeralda, which is an absolute belter, like a big choral, but I'm going to go for Hellfire.
Oh, yes.
Because every time Ian sang it, this is a big Ian Dixon loving this for me. It was just like, that's insane.
It was. It was just.
And I think he should have been very well rewarded for that part. And
getting sort of goosebumps.
Oh, unbelievable. Like I say, I watched it, obviously, the matinee, and I still think it's the best thing I've seen in a long time. It just... I was mesmerised by it, and Ian was absolutely outstanding. And every time he sang that song, Yeah, you were all right as well. No, you were very good. But he...
Yeah. He's the Harlequin, weren't you? Yes.
It was brilliant. It was so good. And, yeah, another part I went for and failed to get. I went for Frollo.
You have to talk through that audition.
Yeah. So I auditioned for Frollo and gave everything. I thought it was all right. Mm-hmm. And I was probably like, my head was bent or something at the end, and I looked up and the five of them just looked at me like, no. Oh. That was, he tried his best, didn't he? And they just went, and I went, okay. And when I did Quasi, they were like, try this, do this. Steve Dakin was like, do this, try this again. And Dave Dawson was going, do this. And they just went, okay. And I was like, is that the door then? Yeah, bye.
Ian auditioned for Clopin as well.
Did he?
Yeah, right. Rather weirdly. And he said they did the same.
Yeah, they just were like...
I think they just... That's when... that's the beauty of a production team, is they sort of know.
Yeah, yeah. All five of them just went, yeah, that's not going to work for us.
You know, we're sort of wholly naive in this situation. Mm-hmm. We think we can do anything, and then it's only when you get in front of a production team and they were like,
And then when you hear Ian, you're like, that's why I didn't get it. He's so much better. But yeah, definitely Hellfire. But I could have picked a number from Hunchback, because the music's absolutely incredible. But yeah, I remember vividly... Like, I was actually weirdly doing some gardening for Sue Tumman, and Dave Dawson was pestering me, listen to it, just listen to it. And I thought, can't be bothered. And I just put it on while I was doing it. And as soon as that da 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 kicked in, I thought, wow, that's special.
Joe, I thought you would choose only because of the historical context as Old Man River.
Oh, yeah.
Because of, you know, it's,
about
racial injustice and...
Yeah, I could have picked a load of things, but...
Have you seen her Paul Robeson?
My mum used to love Paul Robeson,
That's because... Is that on the list now?
No, not yet.
Strange.
Oh, well, Neil's got 10.
I've got 8 more yet. But,
you just have to get another lead role.
I think, I'm running out of time now. Hellfire, sung by Ian Dixon.
Hellfire, yeah,
brilliant.
Right.
Lovely. Brilliant. Well, I'm not sure if I can find Ian's particular performance.
No. Get him in. Get it recorded.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So Oliver then is playing at the Gaiety Theatre from the 16th to the 23rd of March, with nightly performances at 7:30 p.m. There is a 2:30 p.m. matinee only on the Sunday the 17th, and there's both evening and matinee performances on Saturday the 23rd. If you've not done so already, make sure you get your tickets from thevillagaiety.com or by calling 600-555. So, Jonathan, Mark, Vicky, thanks for joining me on the podcast today. And I wish you and everyone at the Microsoft Society all the very best for Oliver.
Thanks very much for indulging us and allowing us to tell our story.
See you again soon.
Thank you. Thanks. Bye.
You're listening to the Manx Theatre Podcast.
And with that, we bring episode 53 to a close. Thanks once again to Vicky, Jonathan and Mark for joining me on the podcast. And I wish them and everyone involved at the Manx Operatic Society with Oliver all the very best for their run. Also, a massive break leg to the cast of Steel Magnolias, who open tomorrow night at the Balcomine Studio Theatre. In the next episode, I'll be chatting with Manx-born West End performer Ben Caron. Make sure you don't miss that one. Don't forget to check out the Spotify playlist by searching for Manx Theatre Podcast, and that's all one word. There's over 90 tracks in the now and over 6 hours of show tunes to satisfy your musical theatre needs. If you have any events that you'd like us to talk about or promote on a future episode, you can contact me through the social media accounts or by email to manxtheatrepodcast@gmail.com. All that remains to say, thanks for listening, and I hope you join me again next time. I've been Neil Callan, and you've been listening to the Manx Theatre Podcast. Goodbye.
The Manx Theatre Podcast, taking a look behind the scenes of Manx Theatre.
An actor's life for me.